right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussman. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that hopefully will inspire you to new possibilities, new opportunities, and certainly get you to really look at your life and look where you perhaps shortchanged yourself and kind of reawaken this idea that, you know what, I can really do something great. And I have somebody today that I invited to be our guest. He's Buddy Biancalana. He's a former World Series star of the Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City Royals. I forgot, it's not football. It's football season, baseball season. But he's really talking about the zone, getting in the zone. And I know that many of us have had that experience when we've been in the zone. And maybe it's different for all of us. I know I've experienced it in sports when I remember as a kid playing basketball when I couldn't miss a shot, playing tennis. So there are just some days you feel great. And then there's some days in your life where everything just goes perfectly. And yet very few people know how to do this on a professional level. And that's why I invited Buddy to be on our show. He's also the co-author of the book, Seven Secrets of World-Class Athletes. And after his World Series experience, he's been a consultant with the Chicago Bulls, the Portland Trailblazers, the Atlanta Braves, and the St. Louis Cardinals. And he's going to share with you what he learned from that World Series experience, and especially when reflecting back on it. He's also done some other interesting things that you're going to find out that getting in the zone is really a mystical experience. It's something where things just seem to kind of come together. And I think most of you know what I'm talking about. So, Buddy, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be with you. I love the name, Inspire Possibility. Anything's possible.
Exactly.
As long as you're inspired.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I was reading over your bio, and I think I told you off air, I just thought it was so great because everything in your bio is something that has value. And very few bios that I've read, and I get a lot of them, really have that quality. And so let's just go about your experience. And since we're really talking about possibility, here you are, you're a World Series star in 1985. What led up to that? What was there a day when you said, I want to play baseball? You were a kid, like a lot of us, and a lot of especially guys, right, where we go out on the park or whatever, and we find a pickup game, and we play for a while. And then what I found is, you know, you're good at a sport, then you go to the next level, and the other kids are, like, just as good as you, but they're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger, and it goes up. But here you are, you're at the ultimate experience. So tell us, what was there a moment when you just said, I'm going to be a baseball player?
Well, my mother, my deceased mother, used to tell the story that at 5 years old, I came to her and I said, do I play for the Dodgers and then go to college, or do I go to college and then play for the Dodgers? And of course she said, you go to college first. And so it was at a very young age that I was really locked into what it is I wanted, and I was very blessed to have a very supported family. My father had a lot of time to spend with me. He was in the stock and bond business on the West Coast, so he was home early in the afternoons, and he loved the game, and he and I would play catch every day. We'd go down to the field and he'd throw to me and hit me fly balls. So I just was very blessed to have that type of support. And it was just something I just loved. I just, it brought pure joy to me, and did for many, many years. So I was just, it was very grateful to find something that felt so good and to, for the most part, excel at it.
And so was there a point when you really realized that you're really good at it and you maybe had a future? You're 5 years old, you have this idea, right? This desire, like a lot of, you know, five-year-olds have this fantasy. But for you, there was a point when this fantasy started to say, hey, this could be a reality. And did you get that experience perhaps in high school or something?
I did. It was my sophomore year in high school, and I had a lot of injuries. I didn't know I had injuries, but I'd fallen off a changing table when I was a baby, a year old, and I didn't realize the impact it had on me. But I was playing multiple sports, and as a sophomore in high school, I was playing basketball, and just all the running, I just couldn't breathe real well. So basketball was not fun for me at that level. I played as a kid and was pretty good. And as I got to high school and there was just more training and more conditioning, it just didn't feel very good. And I, you know, at that moment, I remember saying to myself, you know, this doesn't feel good. And I also think I have a future in baseball, so I'm going to give up basketball. And my dad wasn't real happy about it because he loved watching me play and thought I was real good at it. Some people thought I was a better basketball player than baseball, although certainly my longevity in basketball would have been very limited.
Right.
So it was at that point that I realized, you know, I think I do have a future. And I had a fabulous high school baseball coach in Al Endres, and I was learning so much from him. So it was at that moment where I said, you know, this, it makes sense just to lock into baseball. And that's what I did. And it, you know, ended up being a good decision for me.
So then you graduate high school. Here you are growing up in Marin County. And what were you, like all league or something in high school? I know you were drafted by Kansas City right out of high school, right?
Yeah, I was all league, and I was actually an All-American as well. I had accepted a scholarship to play baseball at Arizona State. I was a first-round pick by the Royals, which was a surprise to me. I'd heard I would go in the third or fourth round, and the morning of the draft, I got a phone call from the farm director for the Kansas City Royals, who's now a Hall of Famer, by the way, not because he drafted me, but who called and said, we're going into the draft, and we plan on making you our first pick. Would you sign? And I said, if all things are right, I would. So I was actually drafted ahead of Cal Ripken. That year.
Wow.
And he certainly went on to have a better career as a shortstop, but we were both shortstops. And so I was drafted, ended up signing, and off I went to begin my career at a young, ripe age of 18, which was a very interesting experience.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing because so many people have that dream, and here you are, you're 18 years old, you're drafted by and this is 1982?
I was drafted in 1978, I had the dream, and I was set to go to college. It was just no doubt. I was from a very educated family, and I was locked into college, but all of a sudden I was a first-round pick, and when you're a first-round pick, you're going to get every opportunity to make it to the major leagues and succeed, and it was staring me right in the face, and I said, you know, it only makes sense to pursue this dream now, and off I went.
So here you are. I kind of want to jump ahead a little bit as you're out of high school, you're playing the minor leagues, and then you come up and play in the big leagues, and you become a World Series star in 1985. And that's when you had this experience of being in the zone, right? I mean, you played better than you ever played before, and it didn't last. So you want to tell us about that what that was like?
Sure. So I kind of a little prelude to the story. So as a young boy, as we just talked about, I certainly wanted to play in the major leagues. I was really clear on what I wanted, and I was fortunate to achieve that goal. But there was never a time as a child that I could ever imagine playing in the World Series. It was just too far out of my consciousness. It was just too big an event. And even when I made it to the major leagues, I never once thought about playing in the World Series. It was just, again, too big an event. However, I found myself sitting in my locker 20 minutes before game time of game one of the World Series in 1985. And at that very moment, again, it was about 20 minutes before game time where we had, not before game time, but before I had to be in the dugout for introductions. And all of a sudden I became paralyzed with fear of how in the world, I felt like I couldn't throw a ball 10 feet or catch a ball that was tossed to me from 10 feet. And I started thinking, oh my gosh, how in the world am I going to go play in the World Series? What am I going to do? And I started having all the thoughts of, you know, of letting down my teammates and management and future Hall of Famer George Brett and the fans and media and friends and family. All those thoughts started to swirl around in my head. And typically before a game, you know, I would get nervous. That's natural to get nervous before a game. And I would mood alter a bit by going and making myself a sandwich or going to get a, you know, some Gatorade or something like that. However, I think at that moment, I intuitively knew that, you know what, there's nothing, there's no sandwich or drink that's going to cure what I'm feeling right now. And it was the first time in my life that I acknowledged fear. And I said, this is really scary. And shortly thereafter, it subsided, and I went out and I played arguably the best seven baseball games of my whole amateur and professional career. And so I just got to the other side of this fear, and right into the zone I went. And my feeling in the series was not being able to do anything wrong. Even if I had tried, there was a force that I felt like had overtaken me that allowed for perfection, that, you know, I hit 73 points higher than my career average and played errorless at shortstop and had a very high on base percentage. Every throw was coming out of my hand like butter off a hot knife. Every ball is hitting me right in the sweet spot of my glove at shortstop. And it was just a very, very remarkable experience.
Wow. And here you are at the height. And then you're invited to, if I remember correctly, you were voted the pitcher, Brett Sabrehagen. He got the MVP award, but you were voted the most valuable player as a position player. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, I was told I was a leading vote getter of position players for MVP. Whether that's accurate or not, I don't know, but I was told that. And yeah, I was. And then 18 months later, I was out of the major leagues because I had no idea what had happened in my mind that allowed me to perform so well. And the anxiety that I felt leading back up to spring training of 1986 was very, very intense because, there, you know, I played so well. And the big question in Kansas City with media and fans and management was, can Buddy Biancalana be the same player during the season in 86 that he was during the 85 World Series? It was a big question for everyone, and the bigger question was in my own mind. So the anxiety that I felt was immense. And, you know, I just remember going into spring training and just really not having any idea what had happened that previous October that allowed me to play so well. So eventually I settled down and played okay, but I was never the same player. And then, of course, there's a tie-in between the physical and the emotional and the mental and so it was all connected. And 18 months later, I'm out of the major leagues because I had no idea how to repeat it and didn't repeat it.
Wow. What a amazing story. I mean, how quickly everything can change.
Oh, my. when you don't have knowledge and you just come upon, but that's how life works. I couldn't understand it at the time, you know, but as I think you certainly understand, we look back on occurrences in our life and we say, aha, oh, I see now why that happened, you know, or we just, you know, take the experiences and say, okay, what am I supposed to do now? And typically we find our path, and I've been very, very blessed to find my path.
And I know from our talking, you also started to go inward and you started really reflecting on your life. And I know one of the things you said, you came to the conclusion that everything is a gift, and that this kind of exodus from your big league career, you looked as a gift, you started going inward and developed the work that you did. But also you also then got involved you had a family by now, right? Family and
Yeah, I had a family and went that route and grew from those relationships as well, and still grow from those relationships, and just try and grow from everything that happens in life. I think is intended for us to learn from. And I've just kind of established the mindset that I'm always kind of looking around. Okay, what's life trying to teach me now? And it's certainly in those hard moments where those are the greatest lessons, and they certainly don't always feel good. But boy, if you can move into them with a deep knowing, which I feel like I've established now, you can certainly move through them a little more gently. And, it's a pretty cool process when you establish that knowing. And I'm grateful for what I've learned. And life can be very humbling.
Tell me about it. So right. the other thing I want to explore too is that then when you went in or you started to get involved in meditation. Is that when did that occur?
I started meditating in 1993. I was feeling really crummy. Again, a lot of injuries and divorce, and I was not feeling good at all. And a friend of mine introduced me to TM, Transcendental Meditation. And, it didn't resonate at first. He had written a book, and I threw it in my nightstand. His name is Bob Roth, a wonderful
I know him.
Friend to me. Yeah, very. Bob and I grew up on the same street. I've known him since I was 3 years old. He dated my sister. And he had written a book, and I just put it in my nightstand. And one day I just picked it up, and I opened it up, and I flipped to a page, and I started reading. It was like, I got hit by a 2x4. It said, do this. And so I learned, and my first meditation was so powerful, and I just knew that I'd hit the gold mine with, as far as what I needed at the time. And it's been a wonderful tool for me. And it's, I guess I'm now into year 24 with it, or 25
wow.
almost. It's a very, very powerful technique and that I've utilized along with a lot of other tools that I've been able to learn and acquire and utilize over the years.
Well, one of the things that you said when I read over your bio is that you realize that if somebody can have an experience once where you said, here's what you said in your bio, through his reflecting, he eventually came to believe that in an athlete experiencing something once, there's no reason they cannot experience it on a more regular basis. He now teaches athletes how to get in the zone through teaching subtle yet powerful processes in the brain. And that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit is what I thought could be the real gift to our listeners who are taking the time to listen to our show. And I know that you also work with musicians about helping them get in the zone, and probably you've worked with business people, I would imagine, helping them get in the zone. So let's talk
right.
about some of these subtle, as you describe them, subtle yet powerful processes in the brain. How many
sure.
are there exactly?
Well, the two main processes for accessing the zone are one is to access a quieter state of the mind where there's just less resistance in your ability to manifest, create what it is you want. And the second process is allowing signals that you're taking in, information that you're taking
keep
in
talking
from
into
your
the
environment.
Phone, buddy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is taking in information or allowing signals and information that you're taking in from your surroundings to move to the cerebellum, which is part of the motor system, which is able to calculate where the body is at each given moment. And it allows all the muscles in the body to fire harmoniously. The subtle fast twitch muscles that are responsible for last split second adjustments in our hands and in our whole body, they become more enlivened when the signals are getting to the cerebellum, and the bigger muscles just start to play the supporting role, and everything starts to balance out. The muscles start to balance, and the problem occurs when the signals or the information that you're processing that's coming to you starts to get interrupted by the prefrontal cortex, and the subtle muscles will start to shut down just a little bit or just become a little less enlivened. And then there's a little muscle imbalance, which leads to a reduction in performance and efficiency and an increase in soft tissue injury, which my studies have proven now. And so it's a matter of accessing a quieter state of mind and generating your intention from there and basically detaching. There's power in detachment. There's great power in a state of allowance. And if the signals are getting to the cerebellum, the performance will increase dramatically and will expedite your development as an athlete or musician and minimize the soft tissue injuries as well.
So let me see if I can say this in a different way and see if I understand what you're saying. So what you're saying, the first step is to have a quiet mind, quiet the mind. And then what I kind of got what you were saying is to kind of perhaps visualize the outcome you want, to kind of really have an intention to really focus on that outcome and to really act as if that's happening. Is that kind of the gist of what you're saying? Did I miss something here?
Yes. No, that's kind of the gist, and I can add to that is, yes, certainly having an intention and just letting go of that intention. As we let go of the intention without, you know, intention but no tension, as my friend Marcy, our friend Marcy Shymoff likes to say, is extremely powerful. But having, yes, we must have the intention and know what it is we want, and then just let go for the most part and allow everything to come to us, and we're better able to achieve our desired outcome then. You know, I like the Steve Kerr of the Golden State Warriors. I'm so enamored with Steve Kerr and the whole Warriors franchise.
I love him.
I do too. And you know, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago there was an article, and I wrote my own article about that article, where Steve Kerr. We all know how successful the Warriors have been, and I grew up, and I know you did, grew up in the 49er heyday here in the Bay Area, and the 49ers have certainly been, for the most part, a great organization. Certainly were back in those days where they dominated, as are the New England Patriots now. But I think, in my opinion, the Golden State Warriors are the absolute best sports team I've ever seen. And you know, Steve Kerr was asked, what's really important? What are the priorities? And, you know, he said number one is joy, and number two is mindfulness, and number three is selflessness, and number four, finally, is competition. And joy is a state of mind. It's a state of being that is independent of anything in the outer world. And when we make that the process, the mind functions much better. The brain is functioning much better. Therefore, the body functions much better. And in my opinion, that's the main reason for the Golden State Warriors' success, which is the future of sports instruction, is, you know, how to put the mind in a state of that feels good. And where there's less strain, and when there's less strain, you're better able to achieve those desires.
Wow. Good information. Yeah, I love listening to Steve Kerr. I mean, he definitely has a confidence and a humility at the same time, which I love.
Yes. Yeah, he does. He's been very humbled by life, and he's had some, you know, difficulties in his life, I know, but has had great success on the court as a player and winning championships and performing well, and now as a coach. He's Steve Kerr is the future of coaching in all sports.
Wow, what a statement. What a powerful statement. What about you now? What if somebody wants to get involved in your zone training to work with you? How do they go about it? Do they find you online or what?
They can email me. The website is zonetraining.net. And my email address is buddy@zonetraining.net.
Mm-hmm. So for you listeners out there, remember it's zonetraining.net.com, not .com. So it's buddy@zonetraining.net.
Correct.
Yeah, and then do you work with companies too besides sports franchises?
I'm not working with any companies. I've worked with some individuals in business and musicians, but primarily baseball is where I'm spending most of my time. But I've worked with athletes in about 8 or 9 professional sports and 23 amateur sports. Because the zone experience is universal for all athletes, whether you're a man or a woman or a youth player. So I've done three or four research projects now and regarding the methodology, and it's proven to expedite development, to increase performance dramatically, and minimize soft tissue injuries. So all is progressing well.
And so what I'm curious about, like right now, you've done all these great things. You have this, I wouldn't say new career because it's, you've been doing this for a while now. But what inspires you right now? What is inspiring you?
Just, you know, being able to work with an athlete and transform a life. You know, for me, nothing turns me on more than seeing people I know achieve what it is they want. I loved achieving what I want, but I get more fulfillment out of ones that I work with achieving what they want, and seeing people start to experience freedom, mental and physical freedom, which I think we're all after in life, and being able to teach an athlete or a musician how to achieve that, you know, gives me just great fulfillment. And gives me a lot of freedom.
And what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is that I can share this with the baseball world, that I can greatly reduce soft tissue injuries, which is a major, major problem in baseball at all levels right now, which doctors have come out in support of my doing so. So that's great. Teams are starting to listen. Major league teams are starting to listen and interested in having me work for them. So that gives me a lot of hope. Hope is to give my children everything that I could possibly give them to achieve their greatest desires, whatever they may be. Those are my two things that give me hope that I wish greatly for.
And what would you like to, in your life right now, let's say in the next 3 years, what would you like to accomplish? Do you have any big vision, goals, or two, 3 years, something like that, where you want to be?
Yes, you know, working with professional baseball clubs. Finish off developing technology that can assist coaches and players on getting in the zone, which we're working on. And those are the two main things.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, in our few minutes we have left, what about your book? You co-authored the book, Seven Secrets of World-Class Athletes. And who did you co-author that with?
Stephen Yellen, who's been a great mentor to me. Stephen and I wrote the book about 8 or 9 years ago now, and it could use some updating, but it's on Amazon for those interested in purchasing the book.
Well, I think we've had a great conversation. I really appreciate your being on the show and our, you know, our friendship and your, you know, this conversation. I think it was a great conversation. It was certainly
it's wonderful.
Enlightening for me and to also because I know who you are and I compliment you and acknowledge you for the work you've done on all levels of yourself, not just in terms of being an athlete, but being a great person, being a seeker, somebody that's willing to go deeper, to really ask yourself these big questions about, you know, what's important to me. And not everybody's willing to do that because it can be very, you know, as we said, humbling. It can be humbling, it can be disappointing. And so I acknowledge you for that courage to go forward and to live your dream.
Well, thank you. And you're certainly doing your part to educate people and help others. And your contribution, Mark, is admirable as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you, listeners out there, for tuning into the Inspire Possibility Show. And every week we have other people here, as you've probably been listening, that are amazing, have a lot to offer. And in the meantime, until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.